She's like, he's helping out. Like, she's like, I'm a mature fucking little gal. Mature little gal.
I'm a mature. Hey there, little lady.
I'm a mature little gal. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Hate Spinnerbait, the podcast where we hate spinnerbait, but we love character development.
Character development. We're doing it right, baby.
It's beautiful. It's wonderful. I'm Michael Ann. With me, as always, is Bethany.
Bethany,
hi. Hi, everyone. I'm doing pretty great. We're doing great. This is another Only Thursday week. We're here to discuss Destin, but we do have some other things to discuss because you only get us for one day this week, so it's a little bit of a potpourri. How was your little fun times in O-Town? It looked lovely.
It was lovely. We didn't get to go to Disney, unfortunately, because it rained a bunch, but we did get BOMA.
Ooh, love that.
Yes, the juice.
Oh my god, chef's kiss, honestly. And those little zebra dome mabobbers, so good.
Oh my gosh, I don't think they have those at brunch.
You know, the zebra domes at brunch? Oh no.
But they have Mickey waffles and they were banging. So,
Listen, you put something in the shape of Mickey and it makes it so much better. Like, I know I'm still just eating a waffle, I'm still just eating a pretzel, but when it is Mickey shaped, game changer.
Yes, 100%. Okay. Top of the episode, we got to talk about Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift news.
So, Taylor Swift.
Heard of her. Yeah, I've heard of her.
Have you heard of her? She's not well known. She has officially endorsed Kamala Harris for president. America.
Yes.
Thank God, because I was really stressed.
She was stressing, y'all. She was
really
stressing. I have determined that in like my circle of friends, I'm the person who, I'm not a voice of reason in many regards. Like, I'm an anxiety ridden adult, y'all. But in certain things, like every time the new Ed Sheeran album comes out, I have to talk Katie off a ledge and say, we never liked the first single, remember? And she's like, you're right. I know you're right. And then we listen to the rest of the album and we like it. She's like, I don't know if I'm going to like this one. I'm like, the first single's never a good taste of it. And then like things like this, I was like, Michael Ann, she's going to endorse her. Like, she's going to endorse her. It's fine. Like, don't worry about it. And the only reason, I literally messaged her like a day before the endorsement, y'all. I was like, the only reason I can possibly foresee her not endorsing her is if it's some kind of safety concern, because like she made the whole post about like, hey, if I'm ever silent, like it's for a good reason to do that. So I was like, if she remains silent, like there's got to be some concern, because some of her U.S. shows are very close to the election, and as we know from January 6th, MAGA people are crazy. So like maybe it was like, I don't want to endanger people, whatever. But clearly there is no like threat of security, blah blah blah. So yes, we're good to go. Carry on.
Yes. I realized yesterday when she endorsed her and I felt this like really strong sense of relief, I was like, oh my God, I have J.K. Rowling PTSD.
That's honestly so fair though, y'all. Like, as millennial women, and especially like our interests, like the two of our interests, like, yeah, I think it's okay to be a little anxious, a little scarred, have a little PTSD, because someone that we engaged with their content for years and like looked up to a certain extent, really let us down.
really let us down in a big way.
I truly believed, first of all, I really love the endorsement. Fucking fantastic. Can I just say, like, honestly, so 10 good. Out of 10. But also, I truly believed from the get-go that she's the most calculated person on planet Earth. Like, I mean, you have to be, I think, when you're that big of a name. And when Kamala first came out, like, obviously, it was a weird time. Like half the news was Joe Biden stepping down, half the news was her taking over. And then people were like, well, maybe at the DNC when she's officially announced. And I was like, no, because there's already hype around her at the DNC. Like that's what the whole weekend is about, is like Kamala hype train, you know? And so I was like, I know that she is strategic enough. And also people always talk about like October surprises and stuff like that, that I was like, I foresee it happening later, closer to the election, like not close enough to where it's like, it won't matter because people won't have time to vote or vote earlier, you know, mail-in votes or whatever. I was like, I feel like it was going to get in before those deadlines. The debate honestly did not cross my mind, but that was genius. Good move, Taylor, Tree, whoever all decided.
No. Donald Trump, cut her mic.
I did the bad thing. I hit the wire, which you're not supposed to do on this show, because if there was hit a single wire, it totally throws our mics off, because we have chintzy wires, apparently, that I desperately need a new one. And I say this every week. I got one. It costs like $7 on Amazon, y'all. It would take no time or effort for me to buy it. And here we are. When it gets so bad that I get like super frustrated with it, that's when I do it. But anyways, yeah, Donald Trump broke the code by Mike. But the investment was great. The timing of it was great. I just like, yeah, I just knew in my heart of hearts, there's nothing. I think also, you know what this is, Michael Ann, is you didn't have to live really thoroughly through like the Kanye West debacle, because you weren't like super finger on the pulse during that. I was. And I still was like a diehard Swiftie from, you know, whatever, like basically Fearless Tour on, I was like diehard Swiftie. And I had to live through that, where people were like making me doubt her and making me feel like a shitty person for being a fan of hers. And I was like, I just like, I'm always a look at the facts person. Like, look at everything we have been shown. I don't think in my heart of hearts that the person who did this would be a terrible person. Again, obviously, I don't know her personally. I can't, whatever. But everything that I've ever been shown, everything that she has done leading up to this, everything she has done since she made her first like political endorsement in 2018 has proven to me that she would make an announcement again, unless I said like there was some unforeseen circumstance, like a safety concern. So I was just like, I'm looking at all the facts. I had been through this before where everyone was like, she's a terrible person. And then mother effer, if it wasn't true, that phone call was doctored. So I think having lived through that before, I was like, I'm cool. I'm calm. I'm collected. It's going to be fine. She's going to make an announcement. We good. And she did. So, yeah, I don't know. This is apparently what I'm skilled at. I am skilled in keeping calm when it comes to things like Taylor Swift's drama and whether or not my friend Katie is going to like the new Ed Sheeran album. I'm like, you are. We go through this cycle every time.
But yes. Oh, man. Yeah, you're right. I wasn't really around. I mean, my Swiftie, heavy Swiftie fandom started during Folklore. So, yeah.
Yeah. It was dark times. Like, there was part of me that was like, should I not be a fan of this person? Is this bad? And then, like I said, I honestly need to take a slight step back. Like, I was a little hesitant to buy Reputation because I was like, I know, crazy, right? And then I really it's gonna sound so dumb. People are like, wow, you're taking this like way too seriously. But I mean, you only want to support people that like you think that you can respect as a person, you know? And right. I, in my heart of hearts, I looked into things, I thought about the crazy shit that Kanye and Kim say, and I'm just like, no. Like the person that I have been shown, and the things that I know she has done for fans, and the person that she has shown herself to be, would not be the type of person who would try to like make Kanye look bad or like, you know, whatever, like try to be petty at him and blah, blah, blah. With all that said, also VMAs here tonight, y'all. Reputation announcement. Maybe we'll see. I don't know. Also, like not as serious. Obviously the most important Taylor Swift news is the endorsement, but can we also just talk about like her slaying the game at the game? And that was like the most beautiful WAG outfit I have done ever seen. Just so many good outfits have come out this week.
Yes. And she is like, she's out and about.
She knew. She knew that this endorsement was coming. Also, another reason why I'm like, y'all, I don't think you understand how strategically planned things are in life. When Kamala walked out last night to at her watch party, like the end of her watch party, to the man. Again, like you usually have to get permission from an artist for that.
Right.
And sometimes they do it, and then the artist has to be like, no, blah, blah, blah. So that happened. They had friendship bracelets at the ready on the campaign website. Like, if you think that her team and their team and everyone's team wasn't talking about this for weeks and planning the exact perfect time, because, like, here's the thing. Like, the debate was going to happen. Obviously, there's going to be news about Kamala, and it was either going to go really well or potentially poorly or maybe a mixture of the two, because no matter what, like, people were going to, you know, whatever, like, make excuses for Trump and his terrible performance. And so, again, to, like, not even let the news cycle talk about him, it was like, no, I'm going to drop this. And then everyone in the pop culture world is, like, you know, reposting what she posted. That's all anyone is talking about today. I mean, yes, we were talking about the debate and, like, very good memes about the debate and stuff, but it turned into, like, just straight up love fest for Kamala and kept her name front and center after the debate. And I was like, strategery, y'all.
Strategery.
And it was just absolutely genius. It was great. But yeah, I think it's all, I think we're all allowed to be a little bit like, okay. Yeah.
Well, and at the end of the day, like, Taylor Swift's a billionaire. So it's like, it's very hard to separate my hatred of billionaires with my love of Taylor Swift. But I'm, you know, it just causes panic, moments of panic.
Yeah. Like, again, she's not a perfect person. I don't want to be like, and now that she's endorsed Kamala, she's the most perfect angel human ever. No, like, she is problematic. Like, I think by all default, all human 100%. Beings are problematic. Like, I'm we're all problematic. You know, no one is perfect. But yeah, I mean, again, the plane, the this, the that, whatever. Like, she's not a perfect person. But I think at the end of the day, she is overall a good person. And I think that has come through time and time again. So
yeah,
there is that for everyone. But yay for happy... little, unless, of course, you're listening to this and you're like, I love Trump, but I don't know how you could have listened to this podcast or two the last 2 years and love Trump. But I'm sorry.
How'd you get this far?
How'd you get this far? I think we've made it abundantly clear where we stand on that matter.
Yes.
So, you know, we're just two childless dog ladies living our best lives. And we are here to support, obviously, our girl in the election. Coming up in November. I don't want to think about it too much, though, because it gives me anxiety. See, that's where I get anxiety, being like, but she should win, but what if she doesn't? Because we don't go by the popular vote, because Electoral College is dumb, and we decided to do it. But this isn't a political podcast where we're going to talk about, about the Electoral College. I ran a manger of tears. This is a Sarah Dessa Millennial Women podcast. But as millennial women who are big Swifties, obviously we had to talk about the Swiftie news. I don't know. Any other thoughts on that? Any other wrap-up thoughts?
Every single one of her outfits this weekend was a banger. The denim on the denim with the red boots. Black.
Oh my god, the all black with that little see-through moment. Oh my
god.
That little cream dress. The little gingham moment at the U.S. Open, like, y'all. Also, okay, but apparently I do have one more thought, which is a little bit. We told y'all, well, first of all, we kept saying we were talking about the VMAs, and then we realized we record before the VMAs, so
yeah,
that will be happening, obviously. So y'all knew you were getting a little dose of chaos this week. And then I promise we will dive into these last two chapters, because they were so good. Y'all, I get, like, so excited every time we get to a certain point in a Dessa novel that I'm like, oh my god, we're about to wrap up, because I'm always like really excited to wrap it up, and then I always get really sad when we record the last episode and I'm like, oh, that one's done, we don't get to talk about, like, not in depth, we don't have to talk about that one anymore. So anyways, I'm just prolonging the inevitable. Well, one more thing about all of this. So obviously some of her relationships have come into question recently. People like her being friends with Amy Holmes, yada yada yada. I don't know what the F for Amy Holmes doing on social media, but, like, girl, stop. Like, stop. I don't know. Pregnancy hormones are getting... Also, because she's a rich
wife. Oh, is she pregnant?
Like, she is currently pregnant, yes. I'm annoyed that I know these things, honestly. Just kidding. I have gone to, I don't want to say bad for Brittany Mahomes before, but I last year was saying I watched Quarterback. Everyone was giving her a lot of shit back in the day for, I wasn't really sure, for I think not valid reasons. I think people are giving her shit for very valid reasons now. I think she's having very, like, I am a prestige, you know, like a, I'm so prestigious.
I'm Taylor Swift's best friend.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. Like, I'm, she's like acting like, you know, she's a set in the bag of chips and she's a rich white lady. So, of course, like, she's privileged by default, you know. But with that said, obviously it's problematic. Again, just like with like Lele, though, I don't think that Taylor needs to answer for any of her, like, she can't help what her friends think. I know people are like, well, you're who you hang out with, and yes, I agree to a certain extent. With that said, as someone who's in the football world, and like, y'all please don't cancel me, but when I like meet up to tailgate with people, I don't ask them what their political beliefs are. Like, I that's not something I do. Know what dear friends of ours, they're more like family now than they are like football friends. They are very Democrats, very liberal, and they have come to my wedding. They have come to baby showers of our families. Like, we have gone to their house. They've come to our house. Like, those are actual true friends. Yeah. Now, these other people that we like hang out with every weekend at football, stuff like that, I don't know. And I'm going to be honest, like, they seem like good people. They honestly, some of them, two of them are business owners. They're probably Republicans. I haven't asked. I'm not going to bring it up. Just yeah. On election years, it gets a little tricky. You're like, I don't know. Let's not bring it up ever. And I'm sorry if that makes me a bad person, but like, I'm not, they don't like, you know what I mean? Like, I think you can have like acquaintances, like people that you are on friendly terms with that you just might not talk about that stuff. It's not the same as people who are your like ride or die friends who you hang out with all the time. It's like those people, like, I'm sorry, if we had different world views, obviously it would be very hard to be friends with them. But yeah, I don't know. I guess like those are my thoughts on it. Like, I'm not excusing it. Again, like I said, Taylor Swift is not a perfect person. She is problematic like we all are. And that is a problematic aspect that is difficult. And I understand, especially, again, like, I'm very privileged. I'm a white person, you know, like, I understand that. So if that is something that does make you really uncomfortable, I'm not going to tell you that it shouldn't by any means. I totally understand it.
Yes, I definitely agree. Like, that picture was rough, but... And, like, honestly, like, I can't even really say shit because I'm not, like, I'm queer, but I'm not really, like, the group that this kind of behavior harms. So it's, like, I'm not even here to make any excuses for her whatsoever. But, like, do you like all of your boyfriend's friends' wives?
Exactly. But, yes, I can go hang out in groups of friends with people and be like, Stacey over there is a little wacky.
But, yeah. You know. But I have no choice.
But we'll all brunch together today, I suppose.
We'll all brunch together today.
Today? Okay, yeah. That's all I got. Overall, good things, y'all.
Yes.
We were low. We're high. It's good. We're good. Everything is good. That outfit. It's laid.
Yes. Everything is cool when you're part of the team.
Everything is so fun. Okay, we are on our last two chapters of The Moon and Morn. What a vibe this novel was. What a, like, different... I feel like since... I'm trying to think of, like, the last book where it's kind of, like, Dreamland. But, like, this is not at all like Dreamland. But, like, Dreamland wasn't really about, like, a romantic relationship. I mean, it was, but it was about, like, a bad one. And it was more about like her journey as a character. And I think the last two novels have been very like their journey as a character, but also like it's been very like, and this cute little love story. I love this like slight departure. This was truly like such a just a good little story. We're gonna finish it off today.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, I like we were talking about, I think when we started recording this book, like it's reminiscent of like her earlier works where it's more about like the friendships. It's more about what's going on in the main character's life more so than like a boy like changing her life or whatever, which I still love those stories. So like no shade.
Yeah. Just to be very clear. No shade to any of those. Absolutely no shade.
No shade. But chapter 20, here we go. Let's dive right in. So she is setting up the party for Clyde. We she's like kind of managing the chaos. Morris is helping them and doing a really good job. By the way, Benji is there and, you know, everything's going whatever. She says that it was hard to say what the biggest surprise about working for Ivy. It was hard to say what was the biggest surprise about working for Ivy. Not that she was a hard ass or a demanding, exacting perfectionist. These things I already knew. What still caught me off guard was the last thing I would have expected. It was fun. So she kind of finds like a kindred spirit here with Ivy. And I think like you were saying that last week, like with the Coyote Ugly thing, it's, we never got like Ivy's backstory, but like, I do feel like they met on some sort of like understanding. And also Theo sucks.
Yeah.
You know,
it truly does.
So she was like, watching Ivy is like a masterclass. Like, she's actually really enjoying working for Ivy. And she sends Ivy home. She's like, ma'am, you need to go get dressed, get ready for your big night. We get a little cameo here from Esther, who is a film student, and she's going to be there helping out filming for Ivy. I love that. Love Esther. I immediately thought of the movie Esther, and I was like, ah.
Yes. Oh, I
perfectly cast.
So honestly, all of the like Clementine girls I thought were excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's like, bye, like get out of here. Benji is so cute. He's like so excited to be helping. He's like running back and forth from outside, like trying to do it all. And then she sees Theo and she's like, things have been awkward, but like, we have to work together because like, he's working for Clyde and I'm working for Ivy. So it's like, we have to talk to each other, but every time it's been awkward. When Clyde asked about it, she said that they'd split up by mutual decision and could easily work together. And it was nothing to worry about, which is very professional. 10 out of 10, Emmeline.
Yes.
But and who knows what Theo said, honestly.
Yeah.
Crazy. So Daisy's setting up the flowers. Her father texts her and says, like, make sure Benji's outside and ready to go at 4. And she says, like, you know, they don't really talk. They don't communicate. It's only via text and it's only about Benji. And, like, it's just kind of awkward. And she's like, this is fine with me, honestly. And then little Theo here is throwing a little temper tantrum, trying to move the fucking tables. And he's like, there's not enough space here. Do you not understand that we need room for people to gather so they can actually see the paintings? And she said, and this, ladies and gentlemen, was how Theo now spoke to me. I turned and looked at the wall. He was studying. The tables are too close. There shouldn't even be tables. He's like trying to take over. He's like, you're doing everything wrong. Like, he's obviously just super jealous and butthurt.
And
he says, trust me, I've actually been to an art show or two. You want more room there. And it's like,
such a pretentious asshole, truly.
Seriously. He's like Ivy ends up respecting her, even though she's like low country, whatever. But Theo never did and never will. Like, mm-hmm. He'll always think of her as like a project. He'll always think of her as like less than him.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. So she's like, okay. So what?
I was just going to say, like, I just can't imagine like having to put up with someone like that. Like, yeah, just making you feel like you're. He acts like she's not good enough. Yeah. That's
terrible. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, men. I mean, we were English majors. Didn't you have men like this in your
fucking classes? Well, actually, yes, I did all the time.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's like, oh, great. I'm back in my creative writing class and this fucking douchebag is criticizing my work and not getting it at all. And then writing a story about rape and thinking it's romantic anyway.
And the way he described women's breasts in it was like maybe the cringiest thing I've ever read. But he really thought it was highbrow art.
It's crazy how many creative writing assignments I read by my classmates, male classmates, that were rape stories.
Yeah.
That they didn't even realize were rape stories.
Not at all.
There was one that really stands out to me that I remember because he like got her shit-faced first. And it was like his best friend's wife. And it was supposed to be this like commentary on like anti-hero or whatever bullshit straight men care about. And all the women in the class are kind of like, you do realize this is sexual assault, right? And he's like, so we got like butthurt. But it's like, what the fuck?
You're like, but actually, no, sir, it is. And I'm disturbed to know that I like have to sit in a classroom with you and you clearly think that something like this is okay. Watching out for you. You want to hang out after class? No, never. Not with you. I don't want to hang out with you. I don't know what you might do to me. No.
Study group? No, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, big, that's going to be a big no for me. Yeah, it's crazy to me just in general how many, like it's so funny that women, like, chick lit and, like, rom-coms or whatever, you know, are, like, considered a thing. And it's always, like, oh, you always have to be writing about romance and, like, love and you like your, like, steamy little sexy novels. And it's, like, have you ever been in a creative writing class with a bunch of men? Because all they do is attempt to write smut and it's terrible. And you have to sit there. And, again, they think it's so highbrow. And, like, none of the women were writing that in my creative writing classes. We're like, I'm not going to be like you knew it had to be read by your peers and you'd have to sit in a circle and have them critique it. And I was like, I'm not writing a little smexy scene. No. But yeah, all of these men would be like writing these things and you're like, but women are the ones who were judged for this. Okay. But I don't know what I was going to say. I think that was basically the end of the thought. Yeah. Is these guys writing this crap and like thinking that they were being really, really sophisticated. And it's like, no, because let me just tell you, I have read some much better smut, gentlemen, and it's the stuff that you look down on. But when a woman writes it, at least it's good. Okay.
Yeah. And consensual.
Consensual. I'm like,
Luke is there. He's helping. And Theo's big mad about this. He's like, I see we're back on good terms with the boyfriend. That was fast. And she's like, he's helping out. Like, she's like, I'm a mature fucking little gal. Mature little gal. I'm a mature.
Hey there, little lady.
I'm a mature little gal. Oh, my God. Okay.
That's so good.
Yeah, she's like, I'm mature. I know how to handle myself, basically. And she's just like, is this why you're, he said, must be nice. Meanwhile, I'm trying to successfully curate and launch a show totally on my own. And she's like, is that why you're rearranging the furniture? He's like, so mad. He's like, you don't know what you're doing. He's so bummed. He's so pissed that like the town's coming together, helping Emmeline. And he's just like, he fucked himself. Like this could be him.
Yep.
This could be him, but he fucked around and he found out. So then Esther shows up, she introduces her to Ivy, and then this is when she tells Benji, like, hey, you have to be ready to go at 4. And Benji's like, no, I don't want to. I want to be here. I want to stay. And she's like, it sounds like he already has plans. And he's big upset. He's like, I'm going to be missing everything. Like, my dad's making me leave early. This is when we find out that Luke supposedly has plans tonight as well and won't be able to make it. And Luke leaves and Esther is like, whoa, this place is nuts. And then Daisy comes. Daisy? Yes. Daisy's like, hey, what are you wearing? And she's like, oh God, what I have on? And Daisy's like, no, bitch, you're not wearing what you have on. What?
No, bitch. She's like, not in my presence. I will not have my best friend represented in this way.
No. She's like, I'm going to go get you a dress, like whatever. So she comes back with the dress and it's beautiful. It is, a short and sleeveless ocean blue dress, clearly vintage with a full skirt. The color was bright, but not loud. Instead, it looked cool, almost iridescent, like water itself. You sort of wanted to dive right into it. And then she also gives her some, strappy silver shoes. Very, I can do it with a broken heart. Yes. And she looks fantastic, basically. And she's like, don't you think this is an attention grabber? And Daisy's like, yeah, you should be. drawing attention. So yeah,
you put in a lot of work into this. You get to have a little bit of the shine.
Yes. Yeah. So she runs down, she gets to the thing, to the party. They're setting up the lights and everything like just comes together. And she's like, wow, this is amazing. She was like, this is such a difference. I was more than happy to take full credit for it. The room went from bright and vast to small and intimate, just like lovely vibes. She's so proud of herself and she should be. And she's like, all right, open the doors, let them in. And she does, and they do.
Let them eat cake. And they did. They sure did. Yes. Yes. This is like, you know what I like about this whole her working with Ivy thing and her like being good at it, which is like, first off, of course she is, because our girl is a queen. But it's just, yeah, like she's one of those people who's obviously very smart, very driven, but like doesn't seem to have like, doesn't like, she's about to go off to college and there's not like a lot of these characters, you kind of like know what their thing is. You're like, oh, like this, you know, this one likes this, whatever. And Emily like doesn't really like have a thing. Like Daisy so has a thing. Like she's like into fashion. She's going to school for fashion, whatever. And it seems like Emily's like, you know, whatever kind of thing. And it's like, this is what you are good at. You are good at managing people. You are good at de-escalating situations. You are good in chaos. And that honestly is a very impressive trait that not a lot of people have. And I was like, of course you would thrive under working with Ivy, because like, and again, like her kindness, her willingness to help people. So like her willingness to help people means of course, everyone in town came out to help her. And like you said, like then Theo's left in the dust and it's like, yes, this is A plus fit. You go, girl. You accidentally like kind of stumbled into your thing, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Exacto mundo. So an hour later, the place is packed. They're already out of meatballs, which made me think about Wish Catering. Yeah. Everybody loves them. I was like, I wonder if that's like a little nod, even though it's a different catering company. She was happy. She's excited. Amber's like, wow, these shrimp puffs are so good. I need to like try a shrimp puff, because they are always like in books and movies being super good. And I've never had one before in my life.
You'll have to report back and let me know if it's any good.
I will. I'll let you know. My pen.
I'm back. We're back,
baby. We're back, baby. So then she sees her dad, her mom comes over and she's like, your dad's holding a glass of wine, like, and drinking it. Like, how crazy is that? And this didn't seem like a beer event is why he's drinking wine. He didn't want to like, probably like make her look bad or like kind of like look.
Oh, I think it's so sweet.
Yeah. It's very sweet. But you know what she does? She goes and gets him a beer and gives it to him. And I love that little moment so much. I love that little moment. Because it's like, can do all of this and still be a small town people, real
still
people.
Still be true to you. Exactly.
Exactly. Apparently, Clyde needs to talk to her, so she goes to find him. But Clyde's chatting about his thing.
Is when Theo like kind of makes an ass of himself, because he's he's giving, again, another like Truth About Forever kind of like throwback. It's giving when like Wes is just like, yeah, I just like put this together. And Carolyn, who like, you know, did her whole art history major thing, is circling around and being like, and what the artist meant by this. And he's like, no, I didn't. That's what it was giving. And I loved it. And I love that actually like Clyde was there to like call him out on it, as he's talking about like the type of like flower, grass or whatever it is, I guess. And he's like, how it's native in this area. And like, this is what this means, and blah, blah. And Clyde just said, that's a lot to get from a plant. I imagine it being said in like that exact tone. And he's like, don't you think? And so then this is where like Morris comes in and he asks him like what it is And he says, what does he say? Beach grass or like?
Beach grass.
Something like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because Glad's like, can I ask a question? And he's like, what is it? And he's like, what is this in this painting? And he's like, beach grass. And Clyde asks him, where can he find it? And Moore says, everywhere. You know that. You're always complaining there's so much, but outside your bedroom, you can't even see the water. And I also like that she says, I was pretty sure I heard Ivy snort. It's like, yeah, Ivy had to deal with Theo's pretentiousness for too long. She's like, and Clyde's like, exactly. Thank you. Thank you for helping me put this pretentious little boy in his place.
little guys and gals. This is when she finds out that Benji is gone. She doesn't know where he is. No one knows where he is. She was like, oh, she left at four. He left at four with my father, which was 2 hours ago. That didn't actually happen. Morris is like, he can't find him. He's driving around. So Emmeline starts absolutely panicking, and she's like, I need to go find him right now. So she leaves Margot in charge, which was very sweet. Yeah, like this cute moment where she's like, you know, here's my legal pad, it has the whole schedule on it. You know, just tell Ivy that you're taking over for me, but she'll probably yell at you, but I know you can handle it. And it's just like a very cute, like, boss bitch sister to boss bitch sister moment, you know?
Yes, boss bitch to boss bitch. Respect. We love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Benji is missing. They're driving around. Her father is just complaining the whole time. It's kind of ridiculous. Yes. And he's like, it's just because we're leaving tomorrow. I didn't tell him directly. I told Leah and he overheard, which is like, bro. And she's like, well, he was probably upset with the short notice. And she goes, your brother might be young, but he is a master negotiator. He informed me, turning onto another street. He'll try to crack and improve any system to his advantage. Over time, I've learned I have to limit his window to do that, or he'll always find a way to better things in his favor. He's 10.
Yes. I don't think a 10-year-old is a master manipulator. And if so, like, they're not doing it on purpose. Like, to manipulate someone is like, you have to know you're manipulating them. So a 10-year-old isn't doing that. Like, they're not trying to, like, pull wool over your eyes or, like, make your life more difficult. They're just being 10 and are going to be like, well, I want to stay, and this is why I want to stay. And if you cave into that, like, that's on you, not the kid. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a weird thing to call a child manipulative. It's like they don't, like, have that in their being yet. Know how exactly to manipulate something.
Right. Exactly. She was like, I know where he is. She assumes he's at the realty office. She goes inside. She runs around. It's empty. And so she's standing in the parking lot looking distressed. And Benji drives by. And Benji.
Where's my car? Princess Auto, driving without a license. Benji would change.
He really went off the rails. Really went off the rails.
He's really taking this divorce hard.
So she's looking distressed. Luke drives by. Luke pulls in and he's like, oh my God, what's going on? And she's like, Benji's missing. We can't find him anywhere. And Luke kind of like calms her down and is like, okay, like, he's fine. Like, let's just take a deep breath. Put yourself in his shoes. Where would you want to go if you're pissed off and you want somewhere comforting and safe? And at first she's like, if I knew, I would have him already. She's like mad at Luke a little bit, but he's just like, just give it a second. And then she's like, I got it. He's in the sandbox. And that's where he was.
Oh, Benji, sweet, sweet Benji.
Poor Benji. So he's very upset. He's like, I don't want everything to change. And she's like, you had us really worried. Everyone is out looking for you. And she's just saying like how disappointed he is that he doesn't want to leave. Like, he doesn't have anything at home. And like, he says, not like this, meaning like really like no, probably like no love, right. No, like, freedom. No, like they definitely don't treat him like a person. They definitely treat him like, you know what I mean? She was like, I know what you mean. Like, I'm going to school and totally new people. Like, I'm terrified. And he's like, Luke will be there. And she's like, yeah, but he doesn't like me. And she's like, but he's here though, isn't he?
That's like, yeah. I'd like to go on record and say, obviously, I still am not a fan of Luke as a boyfriend, but I'd like to retract that he deserves prison. Okay. He's still a good enough guy.
Yes.
Now, what he did was still really shitty. I'm not going to defend him on that. I, again, don't think that they should date, but I'm like, dang, you are like a decent human, you know? So sorry, Luke, to put that on you. You don't deserve prison.
No. And like, ultimately, like, he's 17 or he's an 18-year-old boy. Like, they're not going to make smart decisions. They're 18-year-old boys.
Right. Like, exactly. Have y'all met an 18-year-old boy? They're the fucking worst.
Yeah. Seriously, my high school boyfriend texted me when I was like 24 and was like, I just want to apologize for like how everything went down when we were in high school, blah, blah. And I was like,
wow,
you don't need to apologize. Thank you. But you don't need to apologize because you were a child.
Yeah, you're a child. We were all children. All is forgiven. I also had like not the exact same situation, but I really think until like people's frontal lobes are developed, you're like, I appreciate it, but like, it's okay. Like we were all, you know, going through it. But yeah, this guy who I used to be close friends with, he reached out to me many years later and he kind of like, I figured he might have more feelings for me than I had for him. He reached out for me many years later and was just like, hey, like you are such an awesome person. And I just want to thank you and like your family for everything you did. And I'm sorry if I ever like blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, my dude, like, don't sweat it. We were all, our frontal lobes were all developing. Like, it's chill. It's gravy, baby. Like, don't even worry. But I thought it was so, and like, that is the thing, is a good man will inevitably grow up and realize it and will be like, oh, wow, like, I probably like mishandled certain things and I'm going to apologize. And it's like, no, that's true. It's whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And Luke seems that type, you know, like he'll be such a good boyfriend when he's like 25. He's not there
exactly.
yet. He will get there one day.
Like, he's going to be good dad, good father. He's just 18 right now.
Yeah, he's
you
just
know?
18 right now. Exactly.
Did I say a good dad and a good father?
You did. But it honestly took me a second to recognize it. I knew what you were trying to go with. Like, he's being a good husband, like a good dad, you know, whatever. But you said it and I was just like, yeah. We both realized it at the same time.
But yeah, so she's talking to Benji and she's like, you know, you can't like do this. Like, your dad's freaking out. Like, you really need to talk to him. Like, whatever. Well, he doesn't say you really need to talk to him. But he's like, he's just mad because I'm not doing exactly what he wants. He hates that. And she's like, you know, I don't think anyone likes that really. And he's like, are you still mad at my dad? And she's like, no, not really. I was surprised hearing myself say this, that it actually felt true. Was I sad about the way things stood? And did I wish still the spring and even this summer had gone differently? Yes. But the anger somehow had lifted, leaving behind a sense that I could deal with whatever came next for us, even if it was nothing at all, which sounded bad. I knew having no expectations for some people in your life can be depressing, if not devastating. But with others, it's what is necessary. The hard part is not just figuring out which one applies, but accepting it. So wise. Wise.
That's a damn, yeah, that's a damn good paragraph. I read it like twice. I read it and was like, damn, that's good. And then I went back and like reread it and like broke it down. And I was like, that is such an important thing. And again, like a very, very wise, beyond her years thing to realize at that age. Like, that takes people many years and many years in therapy sometimes to realize. But yes, having expectations for certain people is, yeah, like, it's sometimes it is necessary, especially if that person does share blood with you. And just at another point, like, realizing like, that person is not good for me, or, you know, that person might not be what I need them to be, and that is okay, and I'm allowed to not expect that from them, and I'm allowed to have whatever relationship I deem worthy and I'm comfortable with. And I think that's very hard, especially if it is someone who is older than you, any kind of parental figure, whether it be literally a parent in this regard, or
you know, anyone that you're supposed to give like some kind of like modicum of like respect to, like by traditional society standards, right. It's like, no, you don't have to actually. Like exactly. if they're not respecting you, like they don't get to, you know, dictate what you give to them either, you know? So
right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I like how she's like come to, you know, she's come to terms with this, you know, she's not still sad. She's just like, you know what? It is what it is, man. And I love that. I love that, that growth. I love that realization. I love that she's gotten over this like hurdle that she needed to get over in her brain. If yeah. that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Benji's like, he's really bad at saying sorry, even though he knows when he's wrong. And they just kind of sit there for a minute. She thinks about Clyde at the pavilion, making his big announcement, anointing Theo as expected. By tomorrow, the show would be over. Ivy would leave. Benji would be gone. All this thinking, consciously not thinking about how things would end. And now, just like that, they were about to. It was the very nature of summer. So many long, lazy days when blissfully nothing changes and then everything does all at once. Adorable. So then father pulls in. And Luke's like, hey, I think he's over there. Like, they're kind of talking. They're looking at each other. I mean, they're looking at each other. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. They're looking at the sandbar. And she goes over there and talks to him. And she's like, listen, like, he's upset. And she's like, what, does he want to be forcibly removed now? And she's like, he's upset. And he's like, I'm upset. We've got half the town looking for him. He needs to stop this nonsense again. The car. I don't have time for this. And Emmeline is like, then make time.
Yes.
Then make time. Like, this is you. He's damn your kid.
Straight.
He's your kid. He's scared and he needs you to tell him everything is going to be all right. And he's like, he's not a baby. He can handle the truth. And she's like, he's 10 and he needs his dad. Please make sure he gets that. If for no other reason than I'm standing here asking you, if you do, I swear to God, I will never trouble you for anything else. And then he's like, wait, I'm your dad too. And she's like, no, you're my father. I have a dad, but you are his dad and you can go be his dad. So please go do that. And it seems like she got through to him. It does seem like she got through to him. He goes over, he talks to Benji. And like she was like, blah, 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 blah. As my father looked at me, I knew this time with certainty that it was too late for us. But with Benji, he had so much time to do better. And it started right here, right now. I didn't say any of this, of course, but as he finally turned and began to walk across the lot, it occurred to me that all I'd wanted from him was the unconditional love you get from family, the strong innate connection so unlike anything else. For whatever reason, time, circumstance, distance, he wasn't able to give it to me himself, but he did give me Benji, and I would be forever grateful. With love like that, you can't get picky about how it finds you or the details. All that matters is that it's there. Better late than never.
Yes. Oh, beautiful.
That's so beautiful. Oh my gosh.
I love her and Benji's relationship.
I'm like tearing up a little bit, like, honestly.
Very emotional. And I think that's so beautiful that, like, yes, even in bad things, like, for instance, like, her mom, I think, can never hate her father because no matter what, he gave her. And she got this unconditional love. She got this great, wonderful relationship. And then in turn, Emmeline gets that with Benji. She's like, listen, I didn't really ask for, you know, this. Well, she asked for love from him, that, you know, unconditional love from him, and she didn't get that. But she's like, I can never discredit the relationship I have with you because it gave me this other really beautiful thing. And it's just like, damn, I don't know. That's just beautiful. I just love that. I just think that's so, and just finding that like silver lining and her being like, you know, it's too late for us, but like he can still be a dad to Benji. Like she's like, I'm cool. It's fine. I have a dad. Like I've got my guy. Like I'm gonna make sure that he's a better man for my little brother because he doesn't have a dad and I need to make sure that he has one. And it's just like, again, just like so mature for her age. Like just so, like, I don't know. It's just,
and this really is what like unconditional love looks like. The way that she handles Benji, like she's so patient with him too. Like she doesn't get mad at him. She's not like, everyone's looking for you. What the fuck? She's like, people are looking for you. Like, what's going on? Like, are you okay? Yes. She's very calm. And now, you know, being Fortnite won song of the summer.
Has it already started?
No, I think they do some awards before
most of the things before. Yeah, that's true. Because half of it's just performances. Yeah.
Yeah. That distracted me, and I don't know what my point was, but I'm sure it was brilliant.
It was really, you were saying how, like, yeah, her unconditional love for Benji, which I think it's like, yeah, like that's the point of this novel. Like, you don't know that at the start of it, but like the true heart of this novel, the true relationship of this novel is her and Benji, like truly, like that, you know, like them finding each other and them finding this bond. And yeah, when she tells her dad, like, what he needs is you. And it's like, yeah, like that's at the end of the day. Like, because that's the thing. Like, as a parent, you're gonna be upset. Like, he's like, I'm upset. And it's like, yeah, you have a right to be. Like, you were very stressed. You thought that your son had gone missing, whatever. But like at the same time, you are the parent. When it goes to you both being upset, your feelings don't matter. Like in this moment, like you have to go be the adult and you have to go listen to him and you have to go be there for him. Now, can you go talk to your other adult friends about how that really scared you, about how this, that, the other thing has, you can even tell him, like, you really scared me, buddy. Like, I know you were upset, but like that really scared me. But like, yeah, he's just like so self-centered. As someone who has fathered two children, I'm just like, my dude, I don't know how you don't see this. And I love that immediately Emmeline saw this, and immediately she was like, no, he's upset and he needs you. He doesn't need you to fix him. He doesn't need a lecture. He doesn't need this and the other thing. He just needs you to go sit in the goddamn sandbox with him and tell him, like, hey, I know you're going through a lot of change. I know this is really scary, but everything's going to be okay. At the end of the day, we all love each other, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, just good. So good. I just really want nothing good. But beautiful things for Benji.
I know. I just love, I love them. I love this relationship. Sarah Dessen is just like, Sarah Dessen writes just like the most beautiful love stories, whether platonic or familial or romantic. And I just love that about her.
Yes. Also, as we are about to embark on this last chapter, which is kind of like the little denouement, like, this is where everyone is. This is how everyone's doing. This is how everyone's relationships are chapter. I wanted to touch upon, because we're going to get the reveal of who Clyde picks or whatever, which we're just going to kind of spoil now. He ends up picking Morris. Cause like from the second the chapter starts, you know, that's where it's leaning. You're like, she's wanting us to think that it's Theo, but it's Morris. And you're like, oh, fuck, of course this is Morris. Of course he's a perfect pick. But first I'm just so happy for him. Cause like he thinks he's a nothing. And now he's like a big shot assistant of like this artist. But also I just want to harken back to his moment that he has with him. Obviously, it wasn't just this moment that he picked, because Emmeline says that he wanted to talk to her about potentially taking Morris on the road with this tour or whatever. So obviously, he already had it in his mind. But that beach grass thing is such a good line, because it's so subtle, because someone like Theo is always trying to impress and trying to show people like, oh, I know your town, and oh, I can be one of you, and oh, me living in this trailer is going to impress Clyde, or like, oh, here, Emmeline, who's grown up here, I'm going to go take you to a place that I'm sure you know more about, but I'm going to mansplain it to you and whatever. And I love that Morris says, when Clyde asks, where can you find it, he goes, it's everywhere. Because to Morris, he doesn't know anywhere but Colby. So to him, Beachgrass is just, it's everywhere. Because, like, that's all he knows. And he doesn't think of it as being a Colby thing. It's an everywhere thing. Because Colby is what he knows. And that is what, when Clyde, like, again, Clyde had already made his mind. But I love that line. Like, I love that Sarah wrote that. Because it just shows how, like, Morris doesn't have to try. Like, he just is Colby. He just is the type of person that Clyde would vibe with and Clyde would want to, like, help out. And have him be helped by him. Like, it's going to kind of be like a two-way street sort of situation. And it's like, yes, exactly. Like, there isn't, like, he has to think of it as being a Colby thing or be like, oh, it's unique to this area, blah, blah, blah. Like, to him, that area is his everywhere. Like, that is all he knows. And I just think that was, like, such a cool thing. And I love that Clyde picks Morris. I love that, like, Morris is out here doing it. Oh, let's finish this bad boy. So yes, chapter 21. She says, I had to admit it was different. She is in the city. She is confused because she has to take the subway. And I love that Benji is like the one that's the pro here and is like, we're going to take this train. It's cool. It's whatever. She is with Benji. So obviously I love it already. They have met up. It's only been 3 months, but she's like, whoa, look at you. You shot up. Which like, yes, boys at that age, like they do different every time. So they have met up. She says that her father and her, as she suspected, don't have like, it's not like he came to her and was like, I've seen the error of my ways. That never happens. They have a relationship, which is emails, which is kind of how they started. And she's like, you know what? That's fine. I don't need anything more than that from him. He sends her one that says, what are you reading for school that you love? What do you hate? She does leave him on read for about a week, which I think she has every right to do. Yes, girl, go off. And then she finally does answer. And she's like, you know, I don't need him as a parent. I have enough parenting going on for my mom and dad. My mom who keeps seconds and calling me now that I'm away at Eastview. So, yes, they are meeting up with Clyde at his gallery, like big fancy New York showing. Ivy is also in attendance. And this is where we learn that our girl does have a job lined up to work with her this summer, which I love that for her. That's adorable. I also love that we do get one more mention, one last time in this novel, because I don't think that North Redomain is going to be in the next novel. Can you give us one last
North Redomain.
Beautiful. Until we get to discuss again. That's North Redomain of the Moon and
North Redomain.
So she kind of flashes back quickly to that night that Benji was found, and they all end up at Tally Ho, of all places. Go figure.
Of all places.
Luke, Ivy dancing, getting grinding up with this guy in a shirt. Her and Luke, like, have a little moment. And this is where basically he's like, listen, which I love that he shades himself, and because she's like, thank you so much. And he's like, I don't know if I'd go that far. Remember the last time I was at Dalio? And she's like, true, fair. So they end on good terms, though. They're friends. He's kind of like, hey, we've been each other's life. Like, of course, I'll always be there for you. He lives kind of close to her. His dorm is kind of close to hers at ECU. She says it's very comforting those first few weeks when she goes there and she's homesick to have, you know, a familiar face. But yes, they are friends, which, like we said, probably for the best. In a few years, he'll be a great boyfriend, but not right now. Yep. They finally find our boy Clyde. Now we're jumping back to present day in New York. Okay, anyways, so Clyde is there, and he's all like, have you seen my new assistant? And she's like, oh, things are weird. And of course everyone's like, oh my god, it's Theo. But we all knew it was Morris. And bada bing, bada boom, it is Morris. Him and Daisy are, he did kind of try to break up with her after the beach bash, and she was all like, you're an idiot. And I'm like, yes, Daisy, tell him. He's not, but in that regard he is. And they have decided that they are going to do things old school this first fall semester of long distance and just write each other letters.
I think that's such a good idea.
I know. I love it. And the fact that apparently, like, Clyde says that, you know, when he's not busy doing things, he sees him, like, over, you know, his legal pad. Like, he's putting thought and time and effort into writing these letters. And that is just so romantic.
I love that.
Absolutely love that for them. They are cute. Yes, indeed. Morris and Daisy forever. Morris and Daisy and Benji and Emily. And these are like the two couples of this. Absolutely cute. Her mom, again, is like very frantic that she's, you know, off in New York. And so she's sexier. And she's like, tell me you're alive. And she's like, yes, and well, I'm at Clyde's show. Everything is good. Clyde wants to get a picture. I also love that when Emily shows up, he calls her, there's my Colby girl. Adorable.
Yeah, I love
that. Eat that shit up with a spoon. So cute.
Mm-hmm.
They all take a little picture. She kind of sees this one little, like, thing on the, like, Clyde's artwork behind her. And she kind of, you know, is, like, getting distracted by that. And so then here she says, the thing is, you can't always have the best of everything, Theo, because for life to be real, you need it all. Good and bad, beach and concrete, the familiar and the unknown, big talkers and small towns. Otherwise, how could I have all these things and can still be so close to my own best after ever? As close as this painting behind me, which as the flash popped, I reached a hand back towards, suddenly knowing what it was I'd seen on it earlier. It was just the lightest dusting, and another person might have mistaken it for something else, but I knew where I came from. No matter where I was or what got me there, I would always feel at home when I touch sand. Can't relate to that personally, but a beautiful way to end the novel.
Beautiful way to end the novel.
So good. And so true. Everyone needs the best of both worlds, as Hannah Montana once told us. And I think that is why Ivy and Emmeline work so well together, is that, like, yes, one's a city girl, one's from a small town, but, like, they have the same work ethic. They have, like, they have so much in common and also so much different. Things are happening.
Taylor Swift just arrived at the VMAs, and I need to know what she's wearing.
Is it reputation coded?
Is it reputation coded? It's so reputation coded. I'm gonna fucking scream.
Wait, where are you saying that? Me? Where are you saying this? I'm on Instagram and I'm not seeing it.
I just sent you the reel.
Okay, thank you.
It's kind of far away, but like you can see it.
Hello. Okay, yeah, that's rep coded. Guys, I know we say this all the time, but like,
Oh my god.
It would be so iconic of her to drop this at the VMAs. Like, this is where this all started, in a sense, you know?
Look at the rest of the outfit. I was not expecting the rest of the outfit to look like this.
Okay. I'm looking right now. Y'all are getting our live reactions to this. I know. This is what we're like when we're not recording. It's just us sending things of Taylor Swift and being like, oh my God. Okay, first of all, slay. Second of all, Oh, shit. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Could Taylor Swift, like, not have, like, what an iconic week. Like, if she dropped the Kamala Harris endorsement last night, then tonight drops Reputation, like, get out of here.
Oh, my God. I love it. And I love the boots and the shorts aesthetic that she's going with lately is just wonderful.
Yes. Those boots. She was born to wear thigh-high boots. And let me tell you, she is rocking it. It's like kind of like 2000s punk. Like, can't you imagine like Gwen Stefani rocking this if it was like 2005 VMAs?
Imagine if her next album is going to be like emo, it's like punk a rock.
Raw, like, Reputation's coming. And she's like, TS12. It's an emo ska moment. She got really into that, like, My Chemical Romance moment that she has in The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. On tour, yes. And it's like, we're going full on My Chem, ladies and gentlemen. And this is how I announce it in this outfit. Honestly, with a spoon, give it to me, feed it to me, mom.
Literally,
mother. I am sad.
Oh, you're gone again.
My damn mic. I can't.
But yes, yeah, sorry, that was so distracting. That outfit is like, I'm gonna need to think about that outfit for like many, many, many more hours. But do you have any wrap up thoughts about the moon and more?
Sorry, I'm so distracted by this outfit.
And now she's gone again. I think we can probably say that we're good. The moon and more was fantastic. Beautiful story, as always. Okay. Taylor Swift just arrived at the VMAs. We gotta go.
Yeah.
We gotta go.
Bye. Take care, everybody. Bye.